It's Thursday, July 2nd. It's hiring season. The problem is coronavirus is seeking applicants, too. We start here. A pair of anticipated reports is about to show what the June job market looked like.
How many of them will reopen and stay reopened?
But July is already scarier than analysts had predicted. Is a second wave of layoffs on the way? President Trump isn't outspoken on masks, but he's outspoken on this.
I think it's a hoax.
Why campaign aides are worried about his game plan barely 4 months from Election Day. And as July 4th travel picks up, why is the National Park System so white?
They have fewer than 20% of their 20,000 employees are people of color.
The answer could spell trouble for the future of the parks themselves. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miroboard. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miroboard?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
The coronavirus seems really abstract until it comes through your front door.
A big jump in daily cases of coronavirus in the Roanoke Valley has city officials worried they need to back off of the next phase of opening up.
Around most of Virginia, COVID-19 cases had mostly been on the decline. But recently, a bunch of teenagers decided to travel 300 miles to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, taking some sunshine.
When you come to Myrtle Beach, you're not on a vacation from coronavirus.
As of today, more than 200 cases in Virginia alone have been attributed to that beach visit after contact tracers tracked them down.
It started with a house party in West Nyack on June 17th, a gathering of young adults in their 20s.
In Rockland County, New York, just north of New York City, a cluster has seemingly emerged out of a house party with young people.
And we're told the person who threw the first party was already symptomatic.
Remember, already symptomatic means that host was already feeling ill and threw the party anyway. And you'd think, if people are so gung-ho, so tired of social distancing, so skeptical about wearing masks, they would say that later, right? They would have the gall to say, yeah, I got sick, so what, forget everyone else, I gotta live my life. That is not what's happening. Officials say these teenagers and their parents are refusing to even talk to contact tracers to help figure out who else might be sick.
I don't have to speak with you, don't call me again, I will not tell you anything, or I was not at the party, it doesn't matter what anyone else says, I was not there and I'm not going to speak.
A California man was not too proud to say he had made a mistake by going to a barbecue, writing on Facebook that he contracted COVID-19 and, quote, because of my stupidity, I put my mom, my sisters, and my family's health in jeopardy. Days later, he himself died.
It was absolutely shocking. I wasn't in the room when my mom got the call. I heard her cry out. I still don't want to believe it.
And yesterday, with similar stories being told across California, Governor Gavin Newsom decided to send many industries back into lockdown mode.
We have specifically targeted our efforts to close indoor operations.
And this was the question we were asking back in May. Will a race to reopen eventually result in businesses being closed even longer? We might get some clues today. ABC's chief business and economics correspondent, Rebecca Jarvis, is with us. And Rebecca, like an early Christmas for you, I guess an upcoming holiday weekend means a bunch of reports all drop today, right?
Yes, the jobs report will be the biggest focus, looking back at the month of June and what happened there. And we have some clues about what might have happened. For example, the ADP report, which looks at purely at the private payroll data, showed that jobs did increase by about 2.4 million over the month of June. And that's what's expected.
The hospitality industry saw the biggest gains with 961,000 new jobs added.
We believe that people are going back to work as these reopenings happen, but all of that data around COVID now, where you're starting to see increases in the disease in California.
5,898 cases of COVID-19 on June 30th.
And you're seeing a number of places, a number of states rolling back their reopening plans.
Indoor operations in restaurants, wineries, and tasting rooms.
That has also led to people being double laid off. So people who came back to work and started at jobs are now losing jobs in some cases in places where they're now changing things up again because the disease is back.
Well, yeah. And so is it just an issue of, like, when we look at the numbers and it looks like, yes, we're going to see many more people get laid off, but we'll actually perhaps see more people get hired. Is it just an issue of some industries are hiring, some industries are firing, or is it more complicated than that?
Well, it's a little more complicated than that. Where we're seeing the hiring is in leisure and hospitality and in construction. Those are the areas where we've seen the biggest influx of new hires. And that makes sense because with leisure and hospitality, with the reopenings, people are coming back to work.
Essential businesses like grocery and food are hiring across manufacturing, distribution centers, warehousing, as well as retail and delivery.
It used to be, Brad, that the big question was how many of these businesses will reopen and bring back everyone. Now there's a question of how many of them will reopen and stay reopened.
New York City slamming the brakes on plans for indoor dining next week.
Even a week ago, honestly, I was hopeful we could, but the news we have gotten from around the country gets worse and worse all the time.
That suddenly changes a lot of hiring plans. So where companies and businesses were thinking maybe, okay, we're going to bring back 50% of our workforce, well, now maybe it's 25, or maybe they don't need to bring back workforce because they're not going to be allowed to reopen the way they expected. It's just, as so many people have said throughout the course of this pandemic, the disease is going to drive so many of the decisions.
Retail sales dropped by the most in more than a year in February. Americans last month held back on buying everything from electronics to appliances, building materials, cars, and clothing.
The consumer makes choices regardless of what the government makes choices for them. And even if it's not going to be every single person choosing to stay home or behave differently, people make choices. And we saw that happen when the recession began in February, and we saw it happen when consumer spending retrenched in early March before the shutdowns ever did.
I know for sure, but to my knowledge, none of us have ever been told to slow down on testing. That just is a fact. In fact, we will be doing more testing.
And it all makes me think of, Rebecca, like one of the key issues when you and I were talking earlier about reopening was testing, right? Because at first,
yes,
it took like a week to get your test results back, and that just wouldn't work if you wanted to make sure your employees weren't sick. The time has improved now, but now we're hearing from testing labs saying the wait times are going back up just because everyone wants a test all of a sudden.
Right. It's one step back, two steps forward, one step forward, two steps back, chicken and egg. The testing here is so complex.
And I'm concerned as a state, while we've increased our testing dramatically in Arkansas with the demand for testing from California and some of the Texas, some of the high population states, how's our commercial providers going to keep up with that?
And really think, as more people seek to get tested, the delays are now taking place. And if you're a business that has essentially told your staff, hey, we're going to test you regularly and we'll have results, or your staff is requesting regular tests with results and you can't get those results for 5 days, what do you do?
Well, and you were counting on the local hospital needing an extra 10,000 tests and people getting sick around the city when you came up with
right,
this plan.
Exactly.
The economy has entered an important new phase and done so sooner than expected. While this bounce back in economic activity is welcome, it also presents new challenges, notably the need to keep the virus in check.
When I talk to businesses, they say the two key things that I need in order to reopen and tell my customers and my staff that they're good to go, I need people to wear their masks, and I need to be able to say you can get a test on a regular basis so that we can be 100% sure that everyone coming here is safe and sound.
All right, Rebecca Jarvis, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, you've got to pick your battles in an election year, and the ones President Trump is picking are making staffers nervous. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
I had a mask on. I sort of liked the way I looked. Okay, I thought it was okay.
President Trump was asked about wearing masks yesterday by Fox News. He said he was all for them.
He looked like the Lone Ranger. But no, I have no problem with that. I think, and if people feel good about it, they should do it.
But the president still has not been willing to wear a mask in public. He has not made a forceful call to all Americans to wear them in public settings. He doesn't even require them at his own campaign rallies. But there are areas where President Trump is speaking in absolute, emphatic terms.
I think it's a hoax. I think it's a hoax by the newspapers and the Democrats.
It's been nearly a week since the New York Times reported about an alleged bounty program where Russian intelligence officials would pay Taliban fighters to kill American soldiers in Afghanistan.
This is as bad as it gets. And yet the president will not confront the Russians on this score.
Well, today, after several delays, a bipartisan congressional group is supposed to get details on that supposed program. And yet the president is now calling these allegations an outright hoax by the media to slander him. Let's go to ABC's chief White House correspondent, Jonathan Carl. Jonathan, I still just want to know whether the president has been briefed on this bounty program or not. What do we know?
Well, they tell us he's been briefed on it. What they won't say is if he was briefed back in, you know, there are the reports he was briefed earlier this year, that it was in his the written version of the presidential daily brief.
I can assure you that whatever reporting it is that you're referring to, that we responded in precisely the correct way with respect to making sure that our forces were postured appropriately.
But the White House does say that since the news reports came out, the president has been briefed.
He's many times acted on verified intelligence, and there's times he's decided that it's in our strategic interest not to act.
And now we hear him say that he believes the whole thing is a hoax.
Well, I think, frankly, that many of the intelligence people didn't think it was something that even happened.
In fact, his own press secretary said yesterday that they're, you know, trying to assess the intelligence on this.
It's unverified. It's being assessed. It's going through the same process normal intelligence would go through. But what's
his national security advisor has spoken to this. The defense secretary has spoken to it.
I was going to say, I assume the White House is the one doing these briefings later today.
Well, precisely, it's going to be the intelligence leaders at CIA, DNI that'll be doing the briefing. They're not briefing on a hoax, Brad. And when you hear Republicans who have been briefed in Congress coming out and talking to reporters about it.
Any targeting of U.S. forces by Russians, by anyone else, will face a very swift and deadly response.
Nobody will stand for any report of somebody going after our servicemen and women with any bounty.
They sure as heck aren't talking about this like a hoax. So it seems to me that at this point, there is one person in public life calling all of that a hoax, and that is Donald Trump.
Republicans of all races have protested in all 50 states around that phrase, Black Lives Matter. And the president is here calling it a symbol of hate?
He's talking about the organization. I would note to you that the Greater New York BLM president has said, if this country doesn't give us what we want, that we will burn down the system, and I could be speaking literally. I'd call that a pretty hateful statement.
Achille,
yes, Ben.
He's talking about the organization in his tweet. He says
yes,
the words.
Ben.
He says the words.
Which,
Black Lives
what's
Matter.
What's the name of the organization again?
Black Lives Matter.
There you go. You just answered my question.
The other area where President Trump really seems to be, you know, staking his turf is on literally the turf outside his Fifth Avenue building, the Trump Tower. The Black Lives Matter movement, he said a mural with that slogan on Fifth Avenue would be a symbol of hate. And now he says he'll veto a bill that would rename certain military bases. But John, this is a bill that, like, he would be vetoing a lot more than just that.
This is a huge bill. This is one of the biggest bills that Congress deals with. The National Defense Authorization Act. By the way, one of the things it does is it allows for an increase in military pay.
I dare President Trump to veto the bill over Confederate base naming. It's in the bill. It has bipartisan support. It will stay in the bill.
This is not a bill that that you can imagine a president threatening to veto, but that is what he has done.
The president has said a name change would amount to tampering with the nation's history. There are 10 Army installations named after Confederate leaders during the Civil War.
Again, not through a formal statement of administration policy, which is the way veto threats are technically delivered. This was done through his Twitter feed.
The unhinged left-wing mob is trying to vandalize our history, desecrate our monuments, our beautiful monuments.
Well, and I mean, the White House has portrayed this as, you know, it's President Trump on the side of service members. Critics have said, you're more obsessed with dead Confederate generals than current pay raises. What do the president's advisors think, John? Because we've been told by his former national security advisor, John Bolton, that, like, re-election is one of the driving motivations for this president in every decision. So are these the kinds of stands, the kind of takes that his advisors do think would lead to re-election?
There's a lot of concern. I've talked to people that are very close to the president and talk to the president on a daily basis who are so concerned that they wonder out loud, at least to me, whether or not he really wants to win re-election.
He is losing. And if he doesn't change course, both in terms of the substance of what he's discussing and the way that he approaches the American people, then he will lose.
Some blame, try to cast blame on the campaign leadership. But look, the problem that if you really talk to people close to the president who are concerned about how November is shaping up, they will acknowledge that the problem here is the messaging coming directly from the president himself.
And we still have not heard the president repudiate that supporter that was shouting white power in a video that he retweeted. And you pointed out in your book, Front Row at the Trump Show, John, I thought this was fascinating, that President Trump did once go out of his way to denounce white supremacy. This was after Charlottesville. It was kind of an addendum to his previous remarks. And he basically walked away from that experience saying, well, that's the last time I do that. Jonathan Carl at the White House. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Another area where the president seems super emphatic, he really wants a 4th of July fireworks show at Mount Rushmore. And critics have said, can we please not hold events that encourage people to gather together right now, let alone one with fire risks in the middle of a hot summer?
Thousands expected to attend on Friday. South Dakota's Republican governor saying masks will be provided, but social distancing will not be enforced.
But while Americans get ready for their holiday weekend plans, whatever they may be, the National Park Service is facing more challenges than just the pandemic or just politics. ABC senior Washington reporter Devin Dwyer is here. And Devin, you actually got your hands on some information describing just who gets to visit the great outdoors.
Yeah, Brett, every 10 years, the National Park Service conducts a study of who is visiting and who works in the 419 national parks across all 50 states. We got a first early exclusive look at those numbers, and I got to tell you, they are stunning. The parks are overwhelmingly white. Even after a concerted effort by the government, by advocacy groups to diversify our outdoors, 77% of people who visited the parks are white. Only 23% are non-white, people of color. 42% of Americans, of course, are racial minorities. So this is a real problem for the Park Service.
In light of what we've been talking about, you see only 23% of visitors are people of color. What do you think? What does that tell you?
That tells me that
We've got a lot of work to do.
They have fewer than 20% of their 20,000 employees are people of color. Imagine showing up at a ranger station, a park entry point out in, say, Wyoming as a family of color, coming out there for the first time, and all you see is white people.
Now, I remember asking a person of color, you know, I don't see many African Americans in natural areas. Why is that?
And acting director David Vella, the first Latino to lead the agency, told me, Brad, that this is an existential crisis for them. If they don't diversify visitors to the park, they're in for some real trouble.
He said, David, let me remind you that in my history, in my oral history, when my ancestors went into the woods, they didn't come out.
What is the cause for this, Devin? You said that they've like had a conscious effort over the last 10 years to try to diversify. Why is it that more white people visit national parks and more people of color don't?
You know, I got to tell you, this was a real eye-opener as a white journalist, Brad, to get into some of these issues. I didn't know they were exist. I was blind to it. That's part of the problem.
Oldest, largest, and one of our most beautiful vacation lands is Yellowstone National Park.
Yes, part of this issue is marketing. Communities of color aren't seeing themselves in the advertisements for the park. They're not familiar with them. They weren't brought up in them.
After 12,500 miles, 15 national parks, and untold state parks, I saw two black people. She said she saw four.
I saw four.
Some of that comes from the history of the national parks and the outdoor spaces. People of color have faced a lot of racism and discrimination in those places. Of course, we know the history of segregation and Jim Crow. A lot of the parks, even into the 1950s, were still segregated.
We have an inherent fear. We do, because of our history, about going into these remote rural places where we're not sure that will be accepted.
But there's also an issue here that's a cultural one, Brad, and it sort of dovetails with this national conversation we're having right now about systemic racism.
I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening my life.
Please tell them whatever you like.
Amy Cooper calling police, claiming the man was threatening her life. Chris Cooper, no relation to her, obviously. He was out birdwatching and says he only asked her to follow the rules.
Advocates say the stereotypes, the racial profiling by many of those avid outdoors enthusiasts that we're all familiar with.
This lady literally just pulled a gun because we out here and didn't have reservations for a lake that we didn't even know we had to have reservation for.
Play a big role in keeping people of color away. They simply don't feel comfortable in these spaces.
We didn't know. The only thing you had to do was tell us to leave. We would have left. You did not have to pull a gun.
Some people might say, isn't this just that people of color don't like to camp?
Yeah. And to that, I would say no, right? That's a generalization. And there, just because something isn't happening or the presence of someone is missing does not mean they don't want to be there.
So that's why you see groups like the Sierra Club, fun bloggers like the outdoorsy diva, Lauren Gay, woman in Florida, brown people camping, Ann Breen Tarek here in Maryland, trying to get support and funding for transportation to get some of these families out to the national parks.
You know, try really hard to swallow that question of, oh, well, what brings you here? Well, the same thing that brings you here.
And then be a lot less judgmental about what it means to be an outdoors enthusiast. It doesn't just mean that traditional sense of carrying a backpack and a tent. It could be car camping. It could be spending time in your backyard. It could mean cooking Indian food over a fire, not just hot dogs, to open our minds a little bit more and be more inclusive in those spaces.
Oh, that is interesting. This kind of like storybook concept of the great American outdoors, like that's a construct that can be changed and will change again. That's really interesting. But can I ask you, Devin, existential crisis, if that's the phrase, that's saying it's not just about how visitors feel, that it feels unfair. Is the Park Service saying like the actual parks themselves would be in danger if this keeps up? And why would that be?
Well, the parks rely on advocates, defenders, promoters not only protect the land, to preserve it, resources to go to upkeep those parks, expand the parks.
At every level, whether it's at the local level, at the state level, and the federal level, and who's going to wear these uniforms?
As the face of the country changes, remember, the Census Bureau says that by 2044, this country is going to be majority-minority. People of color will outnumber white Americans the Park Service is going to need the help of those people of color to survive. Congress allocates budgets based on, among other things, interest in the national parks. So unless more families start to take advantage of these spaces, they will suffer. And the Park Service is sounding the alarm.
Hey, Devin, how crowded are the parks going to be this weekend? Anyway, like if people are going, I imagine it's a great time to visit them because health officials are like, yeah, get outside, stay away from people. And yet they don't all want you going to the same parking lot.
Yeah, it cuts both ways for them, Brad. I mean, they're excited that many Americans are discovering the parks at this time of a pandemic. A lot more people getting outdoors, breaking those quarantines. They do expect huge crowds at the parks this weekend for the 4th of July.
After being closed for nearly 3 months, Yosemite National Park opened early Thursday.
But they're urging everyone to pay close attention to those CDC guidelines and check the website of the park that you're looking to visit.
If we have about half as many cars, half as many people, that's a good starting point. And so that reservation system started today.
Each one has different arrangements. Some facilities may not be open at this time, so best bet is to take a look there and wear a mask.
Yeah, we'll see how much independence people are feeling this Independence Day weekend. Devin Dwyer in Washington. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. It's not spring training, so what do we call it? Summer training? Summer camp? Regardless, baseball players are getting ready to play.
After months of waiting, baseball is finally back. Red Sox players showing up to Fenway by car and by foot for the first time since the outbreak of COVID-19. A handful of fans even showed up waiting in the rain to get a glimpse of their favorite players or guess who they were looking at.
Well, it's tough to even tell who's who with all the masks on.
They're going about this differently than other sports like basketball. The NBA says it'll play in this COVID-19 bubble, which is costing about $150 million just to enforce. Instead, these teams will be practicing in their own major league ballparks. The clubhouses, usually known for those plush couches and ping pong tables, are now just being treated like big closets. You come in, you change clothes, you leave. We talked about this earlier. The key to all of this is testing. Players will get tested every other day in the majors. But this week, of course, is like census week, when we wrap our heads around just how bad it could be. And other sports are finding this is going to be tougher than we thought.
The national championship, LSU Tigers, are reporting at least 30 of their football players are now in quarantine due to an outbreak.
But there are bright spots of ingenuity in all this. You know how some teams are putting cardboard cutouts of their fans in the stands, you know, make you feel like you're part of the action? Well, the Oakland A's have announced for $129, you can have your cardboard doppelganger seated in a special zone.
Out of play?
Where if a foul ball hits you,
oh, nice play,
they'll send that ball to your house.
Look at that. He bareheaded the baseball with one hand and a ticket in the other hand and a baby
attached
to the chest.
Our producer Eric Mallow was pointing out, like, this is the safest way in the history of foul balls to catch one. Like, it can hit your cardboard cutout in the face and, like, you still get a souvenir. Thank you again for the ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. Keep them coming. Tell your friends about the show. Even if you're not hanging out with people in person, just shout about the show to your neighbors from your stoop. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.